Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, January 13. Hello, everyone. Orion Samuelson, joined later by Steve Bridge and Max Armstrong and a couple of guests on this week's edition of The Markets. And this is the final one from Arizona for about a month or two, even though I hear weather in the Midwest and other parts of the country not all that great, but sooner or later have to head back to the Midwest, to the Chicago area, to get some work done there. But let's take a look at what happened this week. First of all, we like to check weekly changes on the three major indices at the on Wall Street. And so for the week, the Dow down 0.4%. The S&P 500 almost unchanged, down 0.1%. And the NASDAQ gained 1% for the week. As a matter of fact, the NASDAQ ended the week at a record high today. An increase in Facebook pushed the NASDAQ to a record high, and the S&P 500 also rose after major U.S. banks kicked off the fourth quarter earnings season with some strong results. Major banks on Friday did not disappoint. Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, and Wells Fargo all posted quarterly profits above analyst expectations, and they also expressed optimism about 2017 in their first public comments about earnings since Trump won the election in November. Their shares up over 2%, but later in the trading session today gave up most of those gains. Wells Fargo ended up 1.3%, J.P. Morgan added 0.5%, and the S&P financial sector now has jumped about 17% since the election. That is far outpacing the S&P 500's 6% increase. The Dow dropped marginally today, just couldn't get it going. Walmart stores and other consumer stocks down after a report showed that U.S. retail sales and core retail sales increased less than expected in the month of December. And again, trading volumes were light today. Financial markets will be closed on Monday for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, so keep that in mind. We are heading for another four-day trading week. But that 55.74 posted by the NASDAQ was a record high, and its gain so far in the NASDAQ is about 3.5%. The combined profit of S&P 500 companies expected to have risen 6.2% in the fourth quarter, according to a survey by Thomson Reuters. And one analyst said, we've come a long way very quickly, so there's a chance for a pullback. But overall, the outlook for 2017 is relatively positive. Now, let's take a look at oil today. Oil prices fell and ended the week down 3%. Still doubts over the extent of OPEC cuts. Sentiment worsened by concerns over the economic health of the world's second biggest oil consumer, China, after it reported the steepest declines in overall exports since 2009. Record Chinese crude imports of 8.6 million barrels per day in December helped to push oil prices somewhat higher, but they could not hide the underlying fears over the overall health of the world's second biggest economy. So Brent crude futures today down 56 cents a barrel at $55.45. West Texas Intermediate crude futures down 64 cents, ending the day and the week at $52.37, notching a weekly decline of nearly 3%. But right now, China is in the scope of people in the oil business. Phil Flynn, who is an analyst at Price Futures Group in Chicago, said China right now seems more interested in keeping capital in the country than focusing on growth overall. Now, the supply side. Some market support today from top crude exporter Saudi Arabia, which said its output had fallen below 10 million barrels per day to levels that we last saw in February of 2015. And Saudi Arabia said it expects to make even deeper cuts next month. U.S. oil drillers here in the U.S. cut rigs this week for only the second week in the last 7 months, and that's seen by oil traders as a pause in a recovery expected to last into 2018. A little bit of holiday shopping news from the National Retail Federation today. The Federation said that the amount of money spent by shoppers during the holiday season actually went up 4%, and that's more than they expected. So apparently the holiday shopping season turned out to be a little brighter than we were originally thinking. So let's look ahead to next week. IBM, International Business Machines, the world's largest technology services company, is scheduled to report fourth quarter results on Thursday. Analysts expect IBM's Strategic Imperatives business, which houses its cloud and data analytics businesses, to drive the company's return to revenue growth. Other reports next week, Goldman Sachs Group expected to report a jump in quarterly profit on Wednesday. Industrial conglomerate General Electric Company is expected on Friday to report higher revenue and profit for the fourth quarter. American Express Company will release fourth quarter results on Thursday. The credit card issuer, which has historically catered to upscale consumers, expected to benefit from the holiday season during the quarter. And there'll be activity by Federal Reserve officials as well. Several of them will be on the speaking circuit. And inflation, industrial production, and housing data will dominate a holiday shortened trading week next week. The reports expected to show the economy ended the year with a strong momentum. The Labor Department expected to report on Wednesday that consumer prices went up 0.3% in December. And on Wednesday, a report from the Federal Reserve expected to show that industrial production jumped 0.6% in December, manufacturing output rising 0.4%. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen will speak on the subject, the goals of monetary policy and how we pursue them. That will happen Wednesday at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. And while she's in California, she'll be speaking on the economic outlook and the conduct of monetary policy before the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research in Stanford, California. Several of the regional Fed Reserve presidents will also be on the road next week. A few other reports that we'll be watching. Netflix scheduled to report fourth quarter earnings after that market's close on Wednesday. And Schlumberger, the world's number one oil field services provider, will be reporting on Friday, likely to report a fourth quarter profit compared to a loss just a year ago. And then, of course, all eyes will be on Washington for the inauguration and how smoothly that will go. And we'll be looking to the Trump administration to see what happens on policies affecting all of the economy after his inauguration. And United Continental Holdings is expected to post a decline in net income for the fourth quarter of 2016. Investors are concerned about U.S. airline results following a report from rival Delta Airlines that its profit margins would shrink this year. So those are some of the activities and events, but all of the focus will be on what happens in Washington once it's no longer President-elect Trump, but it becomes President Trump. Agricultural markets always in focus, but still waiting at this point today on January 13th to learn who will be the Secretary of Agriculture. But we'll be talking markets as Max Armstrong and Steve Bridge sit down with Steve Georgie of Allendale and McHenry, and they'll be talking about the annual production numbers that were issued this week by the USDA, showing that indeed 2016 was a record production year for corn and soybeans. That's coming up when we continue here on the markets sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
On our market segment this weekend, we go to the headquarters of Allendale Incorporated, where Steve Georgie is there. It's a beehive of activity there, we know, at Allendale. The numbers came out from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the January report, much awaited. Were there any major surprises in those numbers, Steve?
You know, Max, there were, and mostly for the bean market. And we did see, we saw yield lowered, and that now is affecting the beans. Beans trying to find strength off of these numbers. But that did affect production numbers. But the thing that we still have to remember, carryout numbers did drop. So we did see carryout numbers drop down to 420 million. As far as beans, and that was a surprise for the market. The average guess was 465. So that is quite a bit, and that's got the market trying to find a little strength this week. But we'll see how it finishes. There's a lot of water that's got to run under the bridge between now and that acreage report that's coming up here at the end of March.
Would that number, that soybean set of numbers specifically, have been more bullish if we had them 2 weeks ago, say, before we started to see this slowdown of Chinese buying?
Yes, and that's where if you look at what happened last year on that on the USDA report, we ended up having carryout numbers of 440 million released on that. But what happened after that, February and March, we actually had seen an increase as far as ending stocks on the next two reports, mostly due to the slowdown of buying. Once China comes back from their holiday, they tend to push sales to South America, and that gets them focused and restructured down south versus buying our beans here.
Steve, as we think about those soybean numbers, too, and you just mentioned South America, their crop still looks to be exceptionally large as well.
It does. You know, and when you take their numbers as a whole, even if they have an average crop, because you have some areas down in Argentina that may have some problems. We know Brazil's numbers that came out earlier this week, they were actually better than expected. And so you have to almost assume here as we go through January and into February, you have to plan for about an average crop out of South America. And with that, that's not bullish for us here at these levels. And so that may end up triggering some downside momentum here as we go through the rest of this month.
Does that start to trigger downside momentum on planted acreage as we think about what's going to happen in reports in the future?
You know, it could. And I think another surprise today was the wheat. It's about 3 million, 3.6 to 3.7 million acres less as far as wheat. Where is that going to go? And so that may end up sparking some concern as we get closer to that acreage report in March. Where do we really go from here? Can we get this 3 to 5 million acre increase for beans like some are expecting right now? And so that may help that bullishness, or I should say the bearishness, as we get closer to that acreage number.
Steve, we talked a lot about the soybean business in the earlier part of the program. Now let's focus in on those corn numbers. All those numbers came down from corn, but there is still an awful lot of the commodity out there.
You know, with corn, though, when you look at it, things that we need to focus on is that we still have an enormous crop. Yes, numbers were reduced on this report, but we still have a big crop out there. And when you look at the numbers, still sitting above 2.3 billion carryout for corn, that's still a massive number. A year ago at this time, on that USDA report, we were sitting at 1.8 billion carryout. Now we're sitting over 2.3. So there's a lot of corn that still has to be moved. But the bigger question is, when will we see that move? It still sits in the farmers' hands right now versus being in commercials. And that right there in itself, it doesn't paint a very bullish picture. That is still bearish in the longer term.
If we're waiting to find out when, how about where will all that corn go?
Yeah, that's a great question. But here too, as we go into the next few months, that slows down as well. We've seen strong ethanol numbers, and that's record numbers. But will we see that slow down as well as we go forward? But that right now is helping fuel that demand for corn and giving some strength for that corn market and keeping them at these levels, even with big carryout numbers.
Steve, you mentioned the wheat acreage a little bit earlier, smallest wheat acreage in more than 100 years. And I can't help but think in the past at times how we've seen the situation change dramatically in a short period of time, going from surplus, burdensome stocks of wheat to a concern about very tight supplies. There's so much wheat in the world, we don't have to worry about that right now, though, right?
You know, yes, there is a lot of wheat out there. But like you said, these acreage numbers, this is something that we have to focus on because, yes, it is. We saw this decline as far as acres. It doesn't take much to get this wheat market excited again. And we could take this big carryout number to something that is certainly more manageable very quickly. And that may take these funds that are short wheat yet, that may take them and they may just try to get out of their short positions, which could fuel the upside here as we go through the first part of this year.
Coming into the new year, we've seen a little bit of a gain in wheat at times, and then there's the correction rather dramatically thereafter. That doesn't send the signals that we're looking at a very bullish situation, does it?
Yeah, you know, the problem that we still have, though, is that we don't have the demand picking up like we're seeing for corn, like we have in the bean market. We still don't have that market yet for wheat, and that's where, when you look at that in a bigger picture, yes, can it turn to a friendlier picture down the road? It might. But right now, we still have over 1.1 billion carryout for wheat domestically here, and that we're not seeing this demand pick up. So there's other stores in the world that have wheat as well, and we're just not the one that guys are going to here as of yet.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate the visit. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Steve Georgie, Allendale Incorporated, from their headquarters located in the community of McHenry, Illinois.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today, and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
I spent this last week attending the American Farm Bureau Federation annual convention in Phoenix, Arizona. And while weather was much worse over the northern half of the country, it wasn't all that great here either. And I heard some of our northern state Farm Bureau members saying, "Where's the sun and where's the heat?" Because early 2017, not the best weather, not Chamber of Commerce weather here in the Valley of the Sun. But about 5,000 to 6,000 Farm Bureau members from across the country turned out for the convention. It was an interesting convention because lots of ag on the table and lots of questions, but not much in the way of answers as they continue to wait to see who will be the Secretary of Agriculture. But this was the end of the first year in the president's chair by Zippy Duvall of Georgia. And as I sat down to talk with Zippy, I asked him what he was happiest about in his first year as president of the American Farm Bureau.
Well, I'm really excited to have had the opportunity to go across this country and see agriculture in every region and educate myself, because I fully believe that to be a good president in this position, you got to understand the issues on the land where it's happening. So I've been to 33 states since January, and I've visited farmers out on their place, and I've heard them see the anger in their cheeks when they talk about overregulation. I've seen tears in the eyes when I've seen land grabs by the federal government. And I've just seen all the expressions that go along with people and their private property rights and their ownership of their land and how proud they are of it, but how frustrated they are too.
Well, now we're going to be plowing a new field with the new administration in Washington, and agriculture has a lot of items on the table to be looking at, starting with the Farm Bill. Where are we at Farm Bureau on the Farm Bill?
Well, we're real excited about the process that we went through this last year. We brought together a working group of Farm Bureau employees who had been listening back to our grassroots of farmers out there, and they came together and discussed what they'd been hearing from the grassroots, put together over 50 working white papers and several videos that we posted on our website. And we did that, Orrin, to be able to generate a landscape out in our countryside for our farmers to view and start thinking about the process. What do we need to do with our policy so that we're ready for that discussion? So Tuesday of this convention, our delegates will vote on our policy around Farm Bill. I'm real excited about what they're going to come out with, and I think we'll probably be more prepared to have the conversation about how to either write a new Farm Bill or repair the one we have for the new Farm Bill so that we can have a better safety net for all of agriculture across America. We're very prepared, and we're very ready for that conversation.
Is the insurance program an important ingredient in the Farm Bill?
It most certainly is. You know, and one of the things we've got to do is continue to bring awareness to how important it is. It's such a main part of the safety net, and to make sure that the federal government and our congressmen and senators continue to support that financially, and that we can keep that as a part of our safety net.
We hear the term over-regulation a great deal. Is that on your concern list?
It's, you know, as I traveled the country to those 33 states, just depending on what kind of farm you went to, you either heard over-regulation or farm labor. Two biggest issues facing agriculture today, outside of the economy that we are going through, of course.
The immigration situation, the public doesn't realize how much of the food gets to their table because of the program with immigration labor.
Exactly right. You know, probably 60-70% of the people that are working in our fields today are considered undocumented. A lot of them have been here decades, have families, they're ingrained in our communities. In our policy, what we would like to see is we need a workable, flexible program that small, large, and immediate-sized farms can deal with without having to hire lawyers or have an HR department.
Zippy Duval, the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, visiting with me at the convention in Phoenix, Arizona, earlier this week. A lot of presentations and awards. Certainly want to congratulate Bob Stallman, past president of the American Farm Bureau, who this year was honored with the Distinguished Service Award of the American Farm Bureau Federation. That's their highest award. Also, want to congratulate a young lady from Missouri, Kalina Bruce, who was elected chair of the Young Farmers and Ranchers Committee. She and her husband operating a cow-calf operation in Missouri near Stockton, but they are also engaged in activity off the farm. Kalina is the managing partner of Integrity Tax and Accounting, which is a full-service CPA firm she started 6 years ago. Her husband, Billy, both very active in Farm Bureau Young Farmers and Ranchers, he is a licensed auctioneer and operates the Bruce and Leanne Auction Company. So congratulations to those award winners. And then Illinois had the Grand Champion Award in the Young Farmer and Rancher Achievement Program. So congratulations to Grant and Kristen Strom of Knox County, Illinois, for winning that award. They will receive a 2017 Chevrolet Silverado or a 2017 GMC Sierra. Pretty good payoff for their accomplishments in Farm Bureau. One of the strange stories in agricultural trade last week, at least I found it rather strange, we are going to start shipping shell eggs across the Pacific to South Korea. That country is in the throes of a bird flu outbreak and for the first time ever has asked the United States to ship it shell eggs. That's good for our egg industry. It's awash with eggs in this country, having replenished its flocks after the 2015 bird flu outbreak and ending up with an oversupply that sent domestic egg prices to industry lows this month, about 79 cents a dozen for shell eggs. That is, unless you live in California, where egg prices are much higher per dozen because of the requirement on cage-free eggs. But the Department of Agriculture reported the export business of shell eggs, and that kept prices from sliding further, according to an economist with Erner Berry. But the bird flu is showing up now in other parts of the world besides South Korea. The disease is a problem in Asia, Europe, and other locations. Birds have died in Bulgaria, China, Iran, Japan, Nigeria, and Taiwan. And at least three people have died, and 19 people are sick in China from infections of the bird flu. So how do you get shell eggs to South Korea? Well, you charter freight jet airplanes. And I think that the report said they have chartered three or four airplanes that will transport 3 to 4 million shell eggs to South Korea. I found it to be a very interesting report. Also, a question on President-elect Trump this week meeting with the leaders of Monsanto and Bayer. Now, the two CEOs pitched the benefits of their proposed $66 billion merger. And while critical of other large mergers, Trump has not publicly taken a stance on the Bayer-Monsanto deal. And, of course, whoever the Secretary of Agriculture is, he will not approve or reject the merger, but he'll face the issue of industry consolidation. And who do we find on the Secretary of Agriculture list? Well, lots of names, but I couldn't find anybody at the Farm Bureau Convention who felt strongly about one or the other. Elsa Murano, Under Secretary of Agriculture for Food Safety under President George W. Bush, on the list. Chuck Connor, head of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, still on the list. A.G. Kawamura, he's a former Ag Secretary of California and is on the Ag Advisory Committee, said that discussions within Trump's transition team were free and flowing about who should head the Secretary of Agriculture. Other names that I'm hearing, of course, Chuck Connor, head of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, hearing the name Kip Thompson, to Kip Tom, who is a seed producer in Indiana and apparently a friend of Mr. Pence. So where do we start the trading when we begin next Tuesday? And keep that in mind, that it will be next Tuesday. Well, the production stocks report, pretty favorable to soybeans. Today, soybeans ended at $10.42.5 a bushel after gaining 11 cents today and a lot more yesterday. March corn will start Tuesday at $3.58.5 after gaining half a cent a bushel today. And March wheat got some pretty good help this week. It will start trading next Tuesday at $4.26 a bushel. Then turning to the livestock trade, funds were active buyers in the cattle market. So today, February cattle gained a dollar, and it'll start the week at 118.52 a hundredweight. January feeder cattle will start the week at $130.45. February hogs will start the week at $65.60. Keep in mind, markets are closed on Monday, and that's our time. Thank you for joining us on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.